Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN. Week 4 is pretty much done and dusted. The small subject of a double header of Monday Night Football notwithstanding, we're going to drop some stuff on our social channels about that tomorrow. Recorded this Monday, so looking back at another whirlwind Sunday. Points aplenty across the NFL, comebacks aplenty, and so much to get into with our friend comedian Marek Lau, a Detroit Lions fan. So we will be leading off with the latest heartbreaker for Detroit. We'll talk about that remarkable game between the Browns and the Cowboys as well. Josh Allen rolling once again, Brady being Brady. So much to get into. So let's get straight down to it. Marek, it's very good to see you, man.
Great to be here, Nat. Lovely to see you.
I'm sorry it's not in happier circumstances, of course, because we're gonna look back at another whirlwind Sunday in the NFL, and we're going to lead off with your Detroit Lions. Because
How did you know I support the Lions?
Well, I've known you for 20 years, so that was partly something to do with it. Also, the fact that you're not only wearing a Lions jersey, you have a Lions jersey behind you as well in shot, just to emphasise the point.
Yeah, I'm wearing Stafford's jersey, of course, the legend Megatron. Behind me.
Who's your favourite all-time Lion? Is it Megatron? Barry Sanders?
Well, maybe it is Megatron. I think it's between Barry Sanders, Stafford and Megatron.
So Stafford is still in the running, despite a mixed performance last night. Let's take stock of the season so far, right? Let's start there, because yesterday was another heartbreaker, really, losing to the Saints after blazing into another lead and blowing another lead. But going into the season, I was quite surprised about how many people were really big on the Lions. They seemed to be one of those teams that there was a lot of buzz about for a deep run, which I guess spelled curtains the moment they became that team. But were you that confident going into the season? Were you thinking this is finally going to be the year?
No, not especially confident. I did think the division wasn't, the NFC North isn't that strong. I mean, I can't believe how well the Bears did in the first three games. And one of those was a fluke win against us. But I thought they'd be, 7-9, 8-8, because I just don't trust Patricia's acquisitions, which is basically old Patriots players. And every player, there is something wrong with the coaching, because every player plays worse than they have done in their, we never get to see any improvement in these players that he acquired, like Jamie Collins and all these other, they just don't seem to get better. They seem to just regress.
Well, how much of that? I mean, coaching is so much to do clearly with what's happened, because double digit leads and being blown, there's three times in 4 weeks. Now, I know there was the freak thing, as you say, with DeAndre Swift blowing it. And so that, you can't put that on Patricia. But when this becomes a bit of a trend, you have to look at the coaches first, right? And specifically Patricia first. If you are presiding, we've talked about the same thing with Dan Quinn and the Falcons, right? If you're presiding over this culture where you are brittle and teams can get back at you, that has to come ultimately, or at least be, that situation has to be arrested, has to be prevented by the coaches, doesn't it?
Yeah. Take that pencil from behind your ear and do some proper coaching. I think it's rubbish. There's no structure. I mean, what I was doing another I was doing another interview about the Lions for another online show, and someone asked me a question about the Lions in general, and they've only had like five double-digit wins since in the last 50 years or something. Yeah, they regularly lose double-digit, or they throw away leads. I mean, just coach. You can't coach the same way when you're, 14 points in front. Our defense doesn't seem to be able to stifle things. I think that he seems to be, he's supposed to be a defensive coach, but Drew Brees just tore us apart pretty easily. And you could say this is Drew Brees who is not operating in his full capacity. Michael Thomas isn't there. And it's just, still, we get totally picked apart. Our secondary, I mean, we traded Darius Slay. Jeff Okuda came in. He looks like one of the worst. I know it's hard. It's a hard position to learn and to pick up as a rookie. But
particularly this season, right, as well.
Yeah, but his pro football rating was something like 20, which is awful. He just looks not fast enough to be. He's losing people on routes, but he doesn't seem to have the pace to keep up with people. And Trufant is just, injury problems. I can't pronounce his name. Omurarie, something like that.
We'll take it.
Yeah. It's just, the linebacking core isn't really working. There's no pressure really at all from the defensive line. It's like, what are you doing?
I guess that must be the most frustrating thing for you, because that's what Patricia was brought in ultimately to fix. The same thing with, I mean, there are a lot of parallels with Dan Quinn, you know, that he's a defensive genius, right? That's the book on Dan Quinn. And yet the Falcons are all over the shop defensively. And the same thing with the Lions, that Patricia was brought in because he's his Belichick disciple, and look what he achieved there. And it's often the way, and we've talked about it a fair bit on the show, that it's a hard thing to replicate when you've had such a dogmatic and such a powerful and successful head coach that you've worked under. Inevitably, you want to borrow as much from that person as you can. But too many Belichick disciples seem to be incapable of balancing that with their own direction and their own approach to it. And you look at, look at Bill O'Brien, a similar situation there, right, in Houston, that he can't seem to get the balance right.
Yeah, I think they've both done the same thing with Bill O'Brien, traded away Hopkins, which is the most, probably one of the worst trades ever. The same thing's happened in Detroit, where the excuse was last year there were these personalities in the dressing room which were overriding Patricia. So yeah, he got rid of Slay, and he got rid of, I can't remember the other safety they got rid of.
Quandre Diggs.
So they were the two sort of leaders, two defensive leaders. Diggs was having a great season as well. They got rid of those two. So now the excuse is this year, Patricia runs the dressing room. Mm. And it's sort of make or break this year as to what happens. And it's already broken. I mean, he's going to get sacked. It's just, I think it's going to be, the problem is there's so many bad teams, I think, this year trying to tank. We'll just do enough to get that the sixth round draft pick and pick another bust. Hopefully, pick another bust.
Let's talk about the game against the Saints, and particularly you keyed in on this, that Drew Brees, who I think a lot of people are jumping to conclusions too quickly, saying he's fallen off a cliff. At the same time, demonstrably in the first few games of the season, he was struggling with a deeper ball, right? That and so therefore we're asking questions. Well, has that totally gone from his arsenal yet? To emphasize your point, he had attempted 9 of 15 plus passes through the air. His average pass per completion was over 9, which was, you know, a lot more significant. So this kind of dink and dunk, West Coast, fast-paced, check down Breeze we've seen in the first couple of games of the season was left behind, and it was more like the Breeze of old. And the fact that he was doing that without, I mean, we know Michael Thomas was that. Traquan Smith stepped up. Sanders, you know, is a wily old vet, and I think that probably helps in this situation. But the fact that the Saints offense was able to do this, and Breeze was able to do this against the Lions, must be even more frustrating for you. Against other teams, they're able to stifle him. But with Breeze against Matt Patricia's secondary, he was carving them up.
Yeah, I think that Sean Payton knew that our secondary was dodgy and really weak. And I think we've just had injuries. We've got new players coming in. That's the thing with this season. We've probably talked about it before, where this is almost like the first two or three games, almost a bit like pre-season, really.
Yeah, right.
Because what's happening, you're just seeing massive score lines, and where the whole defense is struggling to keep up a little bit with some of the especially some of the passing as well. I mean, look at the Cowboys. We're seeing some crazy games. And I think a lot of that is because they're just not 100% wired in. And naturally, if you're a quarterback, I mean, Breeze has got experience, but if he's got new receivers, if they're running a different playbook, they're going to play that sort of, you know, running slant routes and doing shorter passes. I think people get on Breeze's back. It's incredible how quick, the same with Stafford. People are saying, Stafford has two bad games. He's awful. That just happened. You know, you will get that over the course of the season. You can't just say the players lost all their faculties. You can't that.
What's Patricia like in press conferences? I haven't seen a huge amount of him and watched a huge amount of him dealing with the media. He's quite deadpan, isn't he, and laconic?
I just think I've watched him in his... I always like to watch the coaches doing a dressing room talk to the players.
Right.
And I just thought he came across as a bit of an oaf when I saw him talk to the players. Whereas I really miss Jim Caldwell. I really miss the calm thoughtfulness of and professionalism of Jim Caldwell. I think with Patricia, he's almost sort of a bit sulking as well, like it's not really his responsibility. That I just can't get over the pencil. I can't get over...
What is your theory on it? Is it like a comfort thing?
It's just stupid. It's just pointless. I've never seen him use the pencil. I've never seen him go, oh, right, I better write something down. He just puts a pencil behind your ear. Why are you worried? If you're thinking about putting a pencil behind your ear, then you shouldn't be... I just...
Some priorities there. Probably other things that he needs to address. Jim Caldwell's a great show because he remember how slagged off he was. And everyone said, oh, he's not strong enough to be a head coach. Because he was so cerebral, that seemed to work against him, right? In all seriousness, do you think this Lions team, and I'll take your point about some of the personnel decisions have been a bit shady, but there's a lot of talent here. This is why there was a lot of buzz about them, and they've played well for stretches of this season. Do you think a coach like Caldwell, not exactly a celebrated head coach, but nevertheless somebody who is, as you say, a calmer character, do you think he would have more success with this team? Do you think you would be a playoff contender?
I don't know about play. I think they're a wild card contender, possibly, because I think the NFC seems to be, for the first time in ages, way behind the AFC. It seems to be a lot of strong teams in the AFC. And I think with Caldwell, we're getting these huge leads. We'd never really blow those leads with an experienced coach. They just know, just do the run game. Just play. We've got Peterson, Adrian Peterson's having some bit of a renaissance with us. Yeah. Well, he was good last year. You've got DeAndre Swift. You've got Kerryon Johnson. You've got like three quality running backs. And yet, we just don't seem to be able to wear... You just get the lead, then you just wear the defense down. You make them play the run game. You do a slow, you tie them out. So you just, and then just grind it through. Like the Browns did right at the start of the game. Just proper grinding old school football. And we've got, I think, a fairly decent offensive line at the moment. And we've got the run game. So why not do that?
And you got the quarterback. You've always been a big Stafford, big Stafford supporter, a Stafford apologist. You got the quarterback to do that, to pull that off. You lead with a run. You got that game. Then, that double whammy of like the Seahawks have done, not so much this year, but like the Seahawks have done in the last couple of years, lead with the run and then let Stafford sucker punch you. I think that makes a lot of sense. Let's move on to that crazy Dallas-Cleveland game, right? Because is particularly astonishing for me, Marek, is just how easily the Browns ran over them without Nick Chubb. Chubb had, half a dozen carries before he went out? So this was Kareem Hunt mainly and D'Ernest Johnson. So welcome to the NFL, D'Ernest Johnson.
Yeah.
They are averaging almost 5 yards a carry. They ran for over 300 yards.
Kareem Hunt is brilliant. You know, he had an assault charge or something bad he did. Which is why the Chiefs got rid of him. But at the time, he was a leading, like top three running back.
Yeah.
Basically, the Browns have got Chubb and Kareem Hunt. He's fine to be a lead running back. He's talented enough. So I don't think there's going to be a real drop off really there in the run game. And that other bloke, can't remember his name.
D'Ernest Johnson.
Yeah, he looked good as well.
Well, you know, I heard Simmons and Cousin Sal talking about this on their latest pod, that we really downplay the value of running backs. That's been, one of the regular themes of the NFL over recent years, or rather teams do, right? They're undervalued, people say, compared to other skill positions, right? And Simmons and Sal were arguing, you look at what's happened with the Panthers, with McCaffrey going down, and they haven't, of course... Davis isn't the same, but they haven't demonstrably fallen off a cliff there. The Giants against that kept it quite tight against the Rams, and Devontae Freeman's coming, so Saquon goes down. But and we're seeing this more and more, and that was really emphasized in this Cleveland-Dallas game, that Chubb's a hell of a player, no doubt about it. And I take your point that Kareem Hunt's stock was low because it was off the field issues, and said that the Browns got... got some value there, and he's a hell of a player, whatever you think about him outside of the game. But they can just, it's seemingly teams can slot in running backs more than ever and not suffer too much if they're elite player. And we'll talk about relates to the Cowboys and Zeke just having got paid, not really there at all. I reckon it's only going to go further, that trend of running backs being less and less valued and less paid.
Yeah, I think there seems to be so many decent running backs. That's why. Or teams, I don't know if it's just me, it used to be teams had one great running back, and now there's a lot more running by committee.
Yeah, seems to be a lot more
depth in the backfield.
The key player for that, I think, that was almost the tipping point or the turning point was Sean Alexander, right? For the Seahawks going back, God, 10 years, right? So Alexander was that era when you were a 2-3 down back and you were just getting milked. And I guess McCaffrey, there's a danger here given how prominent he is in that Panthers offense, right? But most of the time you would have your lead bell cow back and then you would just grind him down and chuck him away after 2 or 3 years in mercenary NFL. And that seems to change. You can understand why they were getting paid more because of the volume. I guess the closest parallel is Derrick Henry or something now with the Titans, where they are clearly the focal point of that offense. And that's what's changed, that you can just mix and match now. And you have, as you say, running back by committee, 2-3, as the Browns demonstrate. What is going on with this Cowboys team? Because Dak Prescott, Chris Westling was pointing out that Prescott's on course for something like 5,700 yards this season. I mean, it's extraordinary what he's able to do. They're also in a situation where they are, like the Lions, I guess, at phases of the game, they look really, really strong and you're really buying into them. And then they are completely destroyed as they were in the first half of this game. Last year, for the last 10 years, we would have said, oh, it's Jason Garrett. It's the coaching. Now they don't have that excuse anymore. Unless Mike McCarthy is a massive step sideways for them.
Well, they're incredible to watch. Even if you're a Cowboys fans are hating it. I mean, Prescott is playing out of his skin and he's got, you know, three great receivers.
Did you think they were going to pull it off then, the comeback? I really thought they were.
I literally thought, because I was so, because of the previous, was it the Falcons one? They I thought they were going to do it.
Yeah.
Just totally on fire when they're running that hurry up offense. You've got the threats, you know, they've got a really great, one of the top receiving corps there. Yeah. And Prescott is playing amazingly, you know, just finding space in the pocket, hitting all the players. I mean, considering what the lack of protection in places, but the defense is abominable.
It was worse than
the Lions. I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence seems to have disappeared. You didn't hear any of their names called at all. It's just getting ripped apart. I mean, I know they're playing against possibly the best receiving core out there, but still they've got... Sorry, but they're playing against the Browns, who are very dynamic offensively. You know, you've got some amazing sort of running back game. You've got, you know, Beckham to watch out for. But
and all the trickery as well, right? So getting Landry mixed. You know,
that Landry touchdown was amazing.
That was superb. And Beckham, I mean, this was a game he needed, right? Because everybody had... And a head-scratchingly so. Same thing with the Browns, right? Oh, it's Freddie Kitchens. That's why they're so bad. He's not ready to be a head coach. That's why they're so dysfunctional. But Stefanski comes in, and yet Beckham, for the first three games of the season, is anonymous. And, oh, is he going to get traded? Who's going to come in for Beckham? Will Beckham go to the Patriots? And then he has a game like this. The catch from Landry, the end around, which he broke through for the score, which pretty much locked the game down. Beckham was lights out last night, wasn't he?
He seems to be one of those players that just, performs. When he starts doing well, he's quite an emotional player. And he's quite sort of Marmite player. I personally don't like him. But
you mean you don't like him because of his attitude?
Yeah, because of his personality. I mean, when he does something well, over celebrate it. Yet he disappears for some games. He completely disappears, and it seems to me he's one of those players that just catches fire, and then he has that electric game. And also, he realised that this Cowboys defense was pretty porous, and half of it can go to Beckham, half of it can be attributed to the Cowboys just missing tackles and some really shoddy tackling from the defense there.
Crazy stat on Beckham.
Crazy.
Craziest out on Beckham, Marek. That was his first 2-score game as a Cleveland Brown.
Oh, really?
I mean, consider the amount of money and the level that he is expected to be at. Certainly wasn't last year and up until this game this year, right? He's meant to be in that collection of what, 8-10 elite number ones, right? You know,
yeah.
and considering, and I know there's been a lot of other reasons for that, and we'll get on to Baker Mayfield in a minute, but that was a striking stat for me that jumped out. Let's talk Baker actually, because we were doing the game obviously with live radio show, Red Zone, lots of things flying around. So you got a sense that the Browns were carving the Cowboys up in the first half, and clearly you could see they were doing on the ground and the trickery, but Mayfield looked pretty composed as well. The second half was a different story by and large. But then I looked at the stat line at the end, and this is one of those things where you look at the stat line, you go back and look at the performance again, and the two things don't necessarily align. If you just looked at the box score here, you'd think Baker Mayfield didn't really have a great game, and it was everyone around him that offensively, certainly, that elevated the Browns to where they were at. But he was connecting. Sure, there were mistakes in there, but he was connecting as fluently as I've ever seen him as a Brown. I wonder if this game might be the one that he turns the corner, because the confidence they'll get from the victory, the fact that they demonstrated this expansive offense that they can, in the same way, and before listeners get carried away, I'm saying they're like the Chiefs identically. The Chiefs have so many different weapons, so many different types of weapon, that's one of the hardest things, that they can mix it all up. And we talked about that on the show with Phoebe last week, that Belichick said that's one of the hardest things to deal with the Chiefs and Andy Reid, is not just the design of the plays, but within those plays, he will mix and match personnel in different positions, and it's interchangeable. And the Browns have a sense of that as well, as we saw with Landry and Beckham and everything else. I wonder if this is a huge game, Merritt, for Baker, that he will turn the corner now.
I'm not convinced by him. He always seems to be best when he's rolling out of the pocket and half scrambling and, you know, improvising, really. I just think he's a bit of a poor man's Russell Wilson. And maybe the Browns were hoping for someone as incredible as Russell Wilson is when they drafted him in what was... I just think that... you know, you've got that inherent trust in quarterbacks you sort of have.
Yes, totally.
Or you have inherent trust in Brady, in Mahomes, you have in Rodgers. You just trust them. I never feel like I'm 100% won over by Baker Mayfield.
I don't know exactly whether it's
height thing, whether I think he's going to get passes knocked down, whether he can sit, whether he reads the... does always reads quickly enough. I just don't know.
A lot of it is composure and I guess reliability, right? And reliability doesn't necessarily mean you have to be a functional Tannehill or even Alex Smith type player. It just means that you... consistency, I guess, right? And this is appropriate a lot to someone like Fitz or a career backup who goes through these streaks and can blaze it up either within a game or streaks during a season and then peaks and troughs, because he just can't get that consistency. I think a lot of it is to do with all of those things, and it can be a rookie quarterback. We were chatting on the show, I can't remember who, with, about Joe Burrow already demonstrating that. Justin Herbert, who we'll talk about in a minute as well, like, seems to have, like, straight away, to me anyway, you believe they belong, you buy into them, they seem they've got a lot of flaws because they're rookies and they're making mistakes, but it's the eye test. Like, straight away, you just watch them and they just seem composed. They're not phased. But you're right, Mayfield has that slight... look, a lot of it, I guess, was particularly early on in his Browns career. He was not having a huge amount of time, right? I think he was being forced to release faster than many because of the pressure he was under. But yeah, I'm with you. He just doesn't... if you were gambling a lot of money on a game, Baker Mayfield would not be high up on staking and backing and bringing that bet home.
Well, I think you made a perfect comparison with Joe Burrow, and I've watched him. You know, obviously, you always keep an eye on the, you know, the number one pick, and he just looks like I think he's going to be great already. I've got faith installed in Joe Burrow. The way he stands in the pocket, the way he'll sort of take hits, he'll make mistakes, but you think, I can just tell you're good. I can tell you're a bit more dynamic. Like, Baker Mayfield can't really stay in, for me, he's too short. He can't really stay in the pocket. He's always best rolling out of the pocket. Whereas Joe Burrow, there's an innate feel to Joe Burrow, which it's, I can't, it's some sort of intangible thing. I can't explain it, but I feel like, all right, he was definitely, his leadership qualities and his sort of calmness to him, and the way you can see him analysing the game and some of the things he does. And even with Herbert as well, like Herbert was a bit more raw, but then you just, Herbert made some incredible throws.
Yeah, didn't he?
Right, that. Some really great deep balls and some really great, you know, balls to side. I thought, this guy's got that in his arsenal.
Two receivers as well. It's worth pointing out with Herbert, who were some undrafted. I think three of them were undrafted free agents that
year. Yeah. It was a great to
DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah, it was. On that, where are you with Josh Allen? If we move on to the Bills game, Buffalo improving their unbeaten record, beating the Raiders. In the end, comfortably, the Raiders had chances. The Darren Waller fumble, I guess, was the real turning point. I think after that, the Bills were able to close things down. They lost a lot of momentum there, the Raiders. Josh Allen is being really hyped up this year, Merrick. Bringing that back to what we were just saying about quarterbacks that have this combination of things, he definitely has that dynamism, right? He's got that playmaking ability, and not just because he's a great runner, because he can air it out and he can fire it in laser sharp. But he certainly going into this season was definitely one of those quarterbacks that was erratic and that I certainly wasn't convinced in that he was stable enough to preside over a serious team. Has that changed for you now?
It's one of the few times is that I've changed my opinions on the quarterback. I was listening to the commentary, I was watching him at the Bills game. I'm so glad they're doing well because the Bills deserve
a
brilliant fan set. They're brilliant. I really like the Bills. I'm so glad they look like they look genuinely exciting. They're playing this energy and it's all coming from him. When he first came to the league, I thought, all right, this is another Blake Bortles type draft of these players are, you know, athletically, they tick all the boxes athletically and they just don't, all right, they've got a cannon arm, but there's no accuracy. And after 2 years, their decision-making gets worse and worse. He seems to have gotten better, a lot better. He looked pretty sharp in this game. Mm. He was making these passes and the velocity which he throws it allows him. What I like about them, they've got like John Brown at receiver, they've got Cole Beasley, two untrendy receivers they've turned into look great receivers.
Beasley's been incredible.
He's always been good though. He's always been good, but he's not like, he's never cool, is he? And then they've got Stephon Diggs. Obviously, he was a bit of a causing problems personality-wise at Minnesota. Now he's the number one receiver there, which he's not competing with Adam Thielen. You know, he's like the guy, he's getting all the passes. And they look, with Devin Singletree, it's a great running back. They just look good. Josh Allen looks massive and strong. He's firing that ball in there, really accurate. He's playing with his confidence. You can tell the whole team have sort of realised that they're good. There's a sort of before certain teams have buzz about them, and I think the Bills. Some great teams in the AFC, but I think Bills are going to win it. I hope they do win it. The AFC East. I can see them into a championship game. I can really see it. I think they're excited.
At the moment, I mean, all round, because defensively as well, they kept Josh Jacobs quiet. He had 15 carries, 48 yards, and Jacobs.
I like that Raiders team. I think they're quite a good Raiders team. They're not bad, you know. Mm. I like Derek Carr.
He's got divided opinion, Carr, right? And he did okay, I think, because the Bills were getting to him a lot, and that's the book on Carr, I guess, is that he struggles particularly under pressure, right? But he looked quite composed. And look, I just think he's in this perennial situation because there's talent around them. They will contend. They've demonstrated that this season. I think they'll be there. You know, you could see them 9-7, maybe squeaking a wild card at 10-6. But I don't know if he's ever going to do enough to convince Gruden he's the guy. I think he's too erratic for what Gruden wants, and I don't know whether this style of offense and what they're asking him to do, unless they can really start to enforce the run game more than they did against the Bills last night, because the Bills had that closed down and forced Carr to beat them a different way and they weren't able to do it. So big win for Buffalo. Out of, you talk about the AFC East, but widening that out, Marek, to the AFC, Who do you think, if you think Buffalo are championship contenders, AFC championship contenders, who else is with them as the best in show so far after 4 weeks?
Well, the big three, obviously, is Chiefs, Ravens, and I think the Bills are now in that group. Mm. That's what I'd say. The Patriots are always going to be there. I looked at the Browns schedule, and the Browns have got to play the Jags, they've got to play the Giants and the Jets, and they've got the Bengals again. And you've got to look at the Browns making the playoffs as well. And I think, I don't know. I mean, Denver obviously have got problems at quarterback problems. The Chargers are just in transition. The Raiders don't feel like they're there yet. The Titans are the other, is the fourth one. So you'd say that, you know, divisional will be the Titans, Bills, Ravens, and Chiefs, and then the wild cards, I reckon, probably Patriots. It's always going to be the Patriots, isn't it? Patriots, Browns, and it's three, isn't it? And Colts, three this year, isn't it?
What do you make of the Colts last night? Because it kind of grounded out. I mean, they were handed the game in many respects because the Bears' offense was terrible, and you know, this move to away from Mitch Trubisky to Foles might come back to haunt them. But we knew that they were inflated at 3-0, the Bears. And what I think was most disappointing was we expected this really interesting battle between the Bears D and the Colts offensive line. And they had a lot of opportunities, the Colts. It was really just not taking those opportunities, particularly in the red zone, that made the scoreline a bit more flattering to the Bears. But the Colts were in control of that game pretty much from start to finish.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't seem to be convincing everybody yet. They've had a fairly easy schedule, I guess, the Colts. Rivers, people are concerned with, despite everything he's achieved, with his propensity to be erratic in clutch situations. So I guess that slightly concerns people. But they seem to be, like the Bills, pretty balanced, maybe not as many weapons as Buffalo, but they're strong, organized defensively. They're going to be there or thereabouts, you'd think.
Yeah, I thought the defense was really good. And I think Rivers, you know, I don't know if Rivers, over the last 2 years, he seems to have, you know, been making a lot more mistakes, especially last season, the Chargers. You can see why they moved on from him. But I think you can do a job for them. You know, he's better than Jacoby Brissett, you know. So I think they're going to be there or thereabouts, I think. I think Rivers will, you know, start to click, and
they're, and the defense is going to keep them in games, like, you know, with Buckner and Houston. A lot of people raving about Julian Blackmon as well.
I thought their running back Jonathan Taylor was great.
Yeah, terrific.
He looked really great, and I think if he can stay healthy, I was really impressed by him. So
again, that goes back to what we said before, right? Marlon Mack goes down. Oh, is that how, you know, big an issue is that going to be? They haven't really missed him at all. So okay, that's interesting. Let's move on to the NFC. Same thing, actually. I'm going to ask you about the NFC and about the Bucks in particular, because they were, you know, in a fight for sure. And credit to Justin Herbert for taking the game to Brady and emphasizing our point that he didn't seem fazed by that at all. And Brady was off color for a lot of certainly the first half, right? Defenses getting offenses out of jail was a bit of a theme, not literally, yesterday, because, well, the Waller play, Josh Norman and on the Darren Waller causing the turnover there. Same thing in the Bucks-Chargers game. So Tampa Bay couldn't get it rolling offensively. And then Ndamukong Suh comes up with a huge play that gives the ball back to Brady in the offense right on the goal line. So they punch that in, and that seemed to change the whole momentum.
Yeah, I think it was a big turning point. It was one of those games where I always knew the Bucks were going to win. Mm. It's really odd. I think my brain has been programmed for years of watching Brady that I instinctively don't doubt the fact they're going to come back and win.
Right.
So even irrespective of what happened, I thought, oh, the Chargers are doing well for temporarily.
Yes.
And then Brady's going to suddenly just click and take them apart because he's just so relentlessly methodical.
Are you enjoying watching Brady in Tampa Bay?
It's such an odd thing watching Tom Brady, because there's no real flair. There's no flair to it. It's like a sort of German football team. where he's just precise and accurate. You never think, oh, wow, what? I never feel amazed by his plays, but he's just consistently good and just seems to, the force of will seems to literally crush the opposition. I'm enjoying seeing the whole new, I think there's a really good partnership between Brady and Mike Evans. And if anything, in recent years, Brady has not, he had Edelman, but his receiving core at New England was not great for the last two or three seasons. And now, while Godwin's down, people talk about Godwin being the star receiver, but I love Mike Evans. I think he's one of the best receivers. He's just a great physical receiver, does everything. And I can see that partnership really starting to flourish.
He plays a menace as well. When Mike Evans, something doesn't go right for Mike Evans, he just looks absolutely incandescent.
Yeah, he's terrifying.
Yeah.
Genuinely terrifying. He slaughters three sheep before each game, allegedly.
That's not true.
Allegedly.
Brady found nine other receivers other than Mike Evans. 10 receivers he found yesterday in the 38-31 win. As in connected with them, completed passes.
Hanging around the locker room. Listen, I know we had a good relationship, Randy, but that's over. Just follow me around to Florida, all right?
Wes Welker was there.
Wes Welker? Look, why are you even... You're just in your underwear, Wes Welker. You're not even playing. What are you doing in the changing room? Now, you can't be... I know you want to be the slot receiver, but you can't... Just put some clothes on, Wes. Wes Welker.
Where were the sheep in all this, is what I want to know. Was Welker involved in that? Or
sheep?
Yeah, but you just said that Mike Evans slaughtered three sheep before. Did you forget you said that?
I forgot I said that.
Amazing. 10 different receivers he connected with. Brady, this is. 5 touchdowns. So he's in good nick. I mean, because let's not forget, there were question marks about whether Brady was, maybe not to the same degree as Breeze, but whether Brady was regressing. Remember last year, a lot of people, Brady's regressing. I've seen it now. His mechanics, he's just not the same. And to your point, which is a great one, the offense in New England was terrible last year in terms of the weapons around him. He had N'Keal Harry, who was a raw rookie. Mo Sanu couldn't. Edelman was the only one, as you said, that was doing anything really.
Yeah.
So this idea he's fallen off the cliff, I think, was ridiculous. And it's good to see he's proving that.
And even he threw a couple of deep balls.
Yeah.
Which is the big test where you think someone's... I mean, it's always Manning. I always think back to Peyton Manning in his last season when he could barely throw it 15 yards.
Yeah.
Brady's arm is still there. He was throwing a couple of deep balls and I thought, well, that is not a problem at all for him.
Eckler on the Chargers side, Austin Eckler, hamstring injury, out of the game, so therefore out with a hammy for a couple of weeks at least. And Josh Kelly was the player who fumbled it and Ndamukong Suh caused the turnover from. But going back to that receiving core, I just looked that up as we talked about it earlier, that Herbert was dealing with. All 4 Chargers touchdowns were undrafted free agents.
Incredible.
It's incredible that Herbert's doing that.
I think it's great. But also you've got... Well, he went to Keenan Allen a lot. And I think Keenan Allen is one of the most underrated receivers in the NFL. I think he's spectacular.
Yeah.
He destroyed... When they play the Lions, he destroyed Darius. They totally destroyed him. Every time I see him play, he does something incredible.
Do you think it's because... Is it the market? You hear the argument that he's playing for a... I know it's crazy that LA's obviously a big market in so many ways, but the Chargers are a small market team, right? Is that the problem? Is it he's playing for an unfashionable team?
Yeah, maybe. I don't understand. I think the Chargers... I mean... That they're going to be, if Herbert works out and they get a decent draft, this is like a building year for the Chargers. So it just shows they've got a talent there. If they can get a couple of good receivers, I don't think they're that far away from being a great side.
Yeah.
I don't know why Keenan Allen is not spoken of as high. I think maybe slot receivers aren't generally, you know, it's always the sort of deep ball receivers that get all the... All the plaudits, but he's one of the best route runners I've seen, if not the best, I think, in the NFL. He's incredible. He just always seems to make space.
You know, Herbert stepping up is a bonus because he wasn't a sure thing. And on that, my next question for you is about going forwards for the Lions, because Stafford, as we've established, you're a big fan, but is coming towards the finals phase of his career. That could still be in, what, another 5 years, realistically? But he's had injuries.
He's 33, I think.
Ah, okay.
Which is not
okay.
Even...
So maybe I'm overstating that a bit. So you would...
Yeah, I don't know. I'll look up exactly how old he is. Because he came... You don't forget, he came into the NFL. He was 20 when he got drafted. Wow. So a lot of players, they come in, you know, they're 23 or something like that. So already he had 3 seasons before... I'm just looking him up now.
Because Darnold was the... Yeah, Sam Darnold came in with...
He's 32.
32, wow. Okay, so he's got... But he has been, you know, he has taken some knocks, of course, last year, most significantly. But
yeah,
so he's got a fair amount in the tank. So with Stafford going forwards, would you stick, like any situation, you stick with him unless there's a clearly better option? And in free agency and with the veterans around, by and large, that's going to be hard to find, realistically, right? Because those that are fundamentally better than Stafford at the moment, from the veterans' point of view, are locked into to massive deals. So from a rookie perspective, if there is a sure thing that comes through, so take Trevor Lawrence, right? People are saying he is, even more than Burrow this year, he is, I think Will Gavin on the radio, our radio show last night, said it's like Andrew Luck. You know, there's a quarterback that comes along every 10 years that you know that quarterback is going to be a lock. Would you trade in Stafford for a player like that?
Well...
If a player like Herbert comes along, say, or Tua, or players that we don't know, you don't know for sure about any of them, but we don't know for sure, there's an element of doubt. Would you, if the opportunity arose that the Lions had that option to take a young quarterback in the next year's draft or the year after, what do you think they should do?
I feel sorry for Stafford, really. I mean, I've watched a bit of the college. I've watched some Trevor Lawrence highlights, and there's Justin Fields as well, who would be getting all the plaudits if it wasn't for Trevor Lawrence. And there's another guy called Trey Lance, I think it's good. But there's those two, Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, they look like they're proper, a bit like when Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III came in, when they were right. the two huge picks there. But they're not going to get, the Lions, I don't think they'll be, I mean, the Jets are properly tanking. The Carolina Panthers are supposed to be tanking, but avoiding doing that. like the Jaguars are going to tank, and I think the Giants, I think, are worse than the Lions. They're not feasibly going to get these two. And also, you do that, you're rebuilding again. The Lions seem to be always rebuilding. It's exhausting, constantly rebuilding. And just when they get to that point, they lose their players because no one wants to play there. Would I get rid of Stafford? I think he's got another 5 years in him. And I don't think you're going to find another quarterback that good. When he came through, he was the number one draft pick, you know. Mm. And he is still... brilliant. He's got a winning mentality. I mean, he must want to give up. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Stafford went, do you know what? I want to go somewhere nice. I want to go somewhere where I could have a chance of winning a championship, you know, where he could be just turn the team around. Like, I mean, for example, the Bears. He wouldn't go there. Yeah. Never dreamed of the Bears, but, you know, they've got that great deal already, and they've got, I really like Allen Robinson. They've got some, and that Miller receiver looks good. I don't know. I'd start to keep, I think you're just, it takes you 2 years to do anything with a rookie quarterback, I think. So just stick with Stafford.
That brings it back to Patricia a little bit as well, though, because if you're talking about just for, please give us some continuity for once, then if the season isn't a disaster, right? So say you miss out on the playoffs, but you go 8-8, 7-9. Maybe there's an argument to stay with Patricia and just say, look, continuity, usually, to the most part, I mean, it hasn't really happened, say, in Jacksonville, right, with Doug Marrone. But generally speaking, if you stick with a coach, then it tends to come around. You tend to get the coach will eventually get it sorted. So maybe, as opposed to completely rebuilding again with a new coach and maybe a new quarterback, that there needs to be a bit of faith kept in Patricia.
No, he's rubbish. I think he's in one of the worst. Well, Adam Gase is doing quite badly, but then Patricia, I'd say, was the second worst coach.
Who would you like to have? Who'd be your dream head coach?
Bruce anyone? Arians.
Arians.
I think Bruce Arians would be really good there.
Who's got a strong Detroit connection that would be?
Wayne Fonts.
Yeah.
Kid but Rock. Kid Rock.
Kid Rock. Wayne Fonts with Kid Rock as the offensive coordinator.
Yes. Those two.
She's driving up and down the sidelines on a Harley.
Yeah, Wayne Fonts, Isaiah Thomas.
Okay, out of current NFL head coaches or coordinators, has anyone got an emotional connection with Detroit that you could kind of tug on the heartstrings, make us great again?
Well, maybe Jim Schwartz would come back, but we had all those. He's the defensive coordinator at Philly, but he was before Caldwell. But he there was no discipline with him. But at least there was passion. And at least, I mean, he said, I don't think anyone, why would anyone want to go to a rebuilding side? I mean, I think they're going to have to get a college coach.
What about Jim Harbaugh?
I mean, Jim Harbaugh would be amazing.
Yeah, because he's got...
He's in Michigan.
He was at the Lions as a player for a bit, right, back in the day.
He probably wouldn't want to leave Michigan because they're probably paying more. You can stay in Michigan and do part-time at the Lions.
Like when a manager has a club team and manages Northern Ireland or Wales. Or something.
Michigan, just do Michigan Monday to Friday and just come in on Sunday morning and then do the Lions then.
just for game day.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we solved that. All right. What else should we get into from yesterday? Well, let's talk Texans because they've fallen to 0-4 now. And we knew that they were going to have a terrible start to the season, most likely in terms of record because how tough it was, right? But that felt like a must-win game, right? You know, because the Vikings have been awful and stats are on their head now because the playoffs are extended and everything else. So we can't say, well, teams who go 0-4 have a 1% chance of making the playoffs. But it's pretty unlikely now that the Texans are going to make the playoffs. JJ Watt's come out and said something needs to change. Deshaun Watson is an unbelievable player that is once again just getting the sparks knocked out of him because of a porous offensive line and no real serious weapons to go to. It just feels like a complete mess there.
I just think that trade says the trade of Hopkins, the worst trade, one of the worst trades in the last 10 years, has just seemed to just totally one thing just knock totally change the side.
Yeah.
I'm surprised how poor they've been. I thought they'd turn over the Vikings, but I think Dalvin Cook is an exceptional running back. And Deshaun Watson's had quite a long career of just scrambling in the pocket and making plays. And you've got to look at, and they've just paid him all that money. You've got to protect him because if you've got, that's your star player. You've got already shipped off his number one target. I mean, Will Fuller's all right, but if he goes down, which he will do eventually, if he's going to by you know just percent laws of percentages, he'll get an injury if he's going to get that have to escape constantly. I think the Texans could be in real trouble in the future. It's amazing the turnaround from sort of quite a dynamic, exciting squad. How things seem to have changed there.
Brandon Cooks didn't have a single catch yesterday because you could conceivably see Cooks not filling the void of Hopkins, but you could see him contributing. You would assume that if they're going to contend, he's got to contribute something, nothing there. David Johnson had that bright first game, didn't he? But hasn't necessarily done much since. He had 16 carries, 63 yesterday against the Vikings. And the Vikings weren't, I talk about and blame and highlight the Texas offensive line, but there wasn't a huge amount of pressure on Watson yesterday compared to other games this season where he's just been, you know, thrown around like a rag doll at times. It wasn't as bad as that. So back to the hot seat question, O'Brien, because of his role as well, Belichickian GM and head coach gig that he's got going on. So that's going to be a huge move to remove him from the organization because it means there are two big spots to fill, but he's got to be on the hot seat. You've got Gaze, you've got Patricia. Marone seems to be kind of battling for his job because the Jags are at least a plucky. Who is the most likely to go first, do you think? Now we're a quarter of the way through the season. Who's the most likely head coach to move on, be moved on first? Dan Quinn as well?
I mean, the problem with this season especially is everything's so up in the air. We don't know if any games are going to be moved or cancelled or whatever.
Yeah.
It's almost a pointless exercise sacking your coach. You might as well just ride the season out and get through it and see what happens. And I think that
I guess the argument I hear, and that's fair enough. I suppose that if you can just pick up the pace on all those other teams you mentioned that will probably be doing the same thing, right? You can get ahead of the curve and start to line up who you want.
Coaches out there? I don't know who's gonna leave there other than college mid-season. Coached. Yeah,
not mid season, but I mean, you could start the recruitment process quicker, and that. Some people suggest that gives you a bit of an edge. I'm not sure I totally buy into that, because I think ultimately you're talking, it's a semantic point maybe, that if you fire your coach a month before these guys do, is it going to really, if you're thinking about it now, you're already thinking about the succession plan and who you might be going for. So I'm not sure I totally buy it. But who do you think all of those coaches could go by the end of the season? I mean, all the ones we mentioned.
Yeah, I think so. I think O'Brien's sort of handled things quite badly in the off season. I think Patricia's not talented enough to be a head coach, and I think Gaze is just the Jets are properly. Darnold seems to be regressing. They absolutely suck.
And they want to move on. Would they move on from Darnold if they had the number one overall pick?
Yeah, I think they would.
They deal Darnold.
I think the Jets are going to be have the number one pick. Mm. And I think they will go. And then the interesting thing is, if the Giants move on from old Daniel Uzmaflip.
Danny Dimes.
Yeah. So if they get the number two pick, whether they change their QB as well. Mm. Or the Redskins. You know, I think Dwayne Haskins was a poor pick. I don't think he's good enough to lead that star. And they've got quite a lot of young talent there as well. So I think I'd like to see the Jets be good again. The Jets have been bad for ages. And it'd be nice to see a team who hasn't had a good quarterback since probably Joe Namath. Maybe Chad Pennington, I don't know. You know, it'd be nice to see
Chad
them.
Ken O'Brien was good back in the...
Ken O'Brien, yeah.
You just air it out.
My biggest fear was that the Patriots were going to tank and then get Trevor Lawrence, and you think, oh, no.
Well, they still might. I mean, because Cam testing positive for COVID, and you alluded to it, we don't know clearly how the season's going to play out with regards to the COVID interruption, but it's a massive issue and concern for the NFL, isn't it? Because it's not like the other major American sports and how they've been able to deal with the pandemic and play through it, whether it's a bubble with the NBA or whether it's just cramming games in to catch up like baseball. The NFL can't do that. So it seems inevitable there will be more outbreaks. And I know that people say, well, the Vikings, there were no cases there. So look at that. And the Titans are going to be investigated in terms of, well, exactly why there was such a widespread outbreak. But it makes sense, doesn't it, Merritt? There are going to be more of these, you think, statistically?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, I think the whole season is going to be a really weird season. Mm. I mean, if it hits the playoffs, that'll be interesting. If the whole squad gets decimated in the playoffs.
Or a starting quarterback, right?
So yeah, if Mahomes or someone like that goes down, then you look at then you're pretty much, if you lose your starting quarterback in the playoffs, and the caliber of the opposition pretty much means you're going to struggle to win. Mm. With the exception of someone like Nick Foles, who started later on, maybe Doug Williams with Redskins back in the 80s. But to win playoff games with a backup quarterback is pretty tough.
Yeah.
And I bet we see that. I bet a big name goes down. Mm. Well, Newton's already got it, but in the playoffs or some key matches. It'd be fascinating to see what happens.
And when they take bye weeks out of the way as well, because at the moment the Steelers... Titans, that's how they've rejigged it, and given essentially week four that we've just had, that's been their bye week, and they then play when they were meant to, and they realigned the Ravens game with Pittsburgh, so they can jiggle it around. But when the bye weeks have gone, and then so what, they're extending into the off season and the regular season into the off season, everything.
Are they taking all the bye weeks out now?
For those two, they've had. So the Steelers and the Titans have basically had their bye weeks now.
I think they should. What happens? I mean, they should just go, do you know what? We're going to take all the bye weeks out. Mm. Because they're going to need those, I think. Because if you have a bye week, because it gets to the point when teams have bye weeks and then they get hit and there's no bye
and
week.
Then they get,
You almost want to take them out now as some insurance for it, I think.
Well, Andrew Brandt was telling us on our radio show that they've already got a contingency plan with Tampa and the Super Bowl to have it later on in the year if they need to, right? So there won't be in any rush. And we were discussing the opportunity that it creates for the NFL, which they must be wise to as well, that if they have to change, they will have to change the schedule most likely and then put a game on a Friday night and a Tuesday night and guess what, a Wednesday night. And I wonder if they don't look back then. Ben Isaacs was saying, friend of the show, Ben was saying, look, Saturdays are sacred because of college and the NFL probably won't try and risk that, as in putting games on Saturdays and starting going forwards post-COVID scheduling them. But it wouldn't surprise me because this is how exactly what happened with football, right? And the Premier League, that you never played games on days other than Saturday, 3 o'clock. And then you had Sunday games and Monday night football. Remember Monday night football launched? Friday night football in the Premier League, everyone was up in arms and appalled. And now everybody's fine with it. Everybody rolls with it. So I could see the NFL rolling that out.
Well, the beauty of the season is, you know, September till January. So you've got February, March, April, May, June, July to play. They're never not going to play the games. They can just spread it over the course of the year. You know, I think there'll be always be a way to reschedule it. So I don't feel like the season's going to collapse in that way. It's just what you do when, if a couple of players, say Mahomes gets COVID basically in the AFC Championship game. And then the other side, the Bills, maybe, for example, is scheduled in. He tests. Do you postpone the game? But the Bills would want to play the game. You know, they want to go, of course, they want to go, yeah, we want to play the Chiefs without Mahomes.
Yeah.
How they work that out, you know, and what happens.
It wouldn't be fair to postpone the game because a player goes down, because you can't discriminate. But obviously there is a fundamental difference between an elite player going down and a third stringer going down, but you can't discriminate. It's not fair on the opposition. The Chiefs would have to play. You know, it would be an uproar if they said, oh, well, hang on, we'll give you an extra week, sir, or 2 weeks, you know, and then he can play again. I can't see that happening, but it's undoubtedly going to be twists and turns. One more for you, Marek, before we let you go, because time is against us. Sunday night football and a win for the Eagles, which means that they are now top of the NFC East. It's the worst division in football, isn't it? Clearly the worst division in football. Are we writing off the Eagles a bit too soon? Washington, as you say, are not great. Some interesting players defensively and rebuilding. We knew that. The Giants are terrible. Dallas are erratic. Eagles have been really banged up, and only a week ago Carson Wentz was being written off and he'll never be the same, and maybe they should move on from Carson Wentz and all of this, but he fought hard in Sunday night football. Do you think we've been a little bit too quick given what this Philly team has achieved in recent years to write him off?
I don't think they look that great. I mean, that's playing against the 49ers with a backup quarterback who they replaced. They replaced the Niners with CJ Beathard. I mean, pronounce his name properly. And the 49ers almost won with a Hail Mary in the last second. The Eagles haven't been great since they won the Super Bowl. They've not really performed. I don't really like their set of receivers. I don't think that they're that spectacular. Vince is... he's not really blown me away. And even, I would say, I've been more impressed with Jared Goff lately than Carson Wentz. I think Jared Goff seems to have improved his accuracy and seems to be moving the ball out his hands a lot quicker, whereas Wentz doesn't seem to be as dynamic as he was pre-injury. So, I can't see how the Eagles, I mean... it's between the Eagles and the Cowboys for that playoff position.
Yeah, I think the Cowboys will walk it in the end. Yeah. I like as well, you went quite German on Vince then. I quite like
Vince. How do you pronounce it?
Well, I do that as well.
Vince.
I do that as well.
The quarterback for the Eagles. It's the Carson Vince. See, it's the sauerkraut before each game. So his passing is not as good as it used to be.
Mike Evans has sheep. Vince has sauerkraut. We're building something. Hey, listen, that's reminding me. I'm sorry that
the 2-point book game. Every time I'm on the podcast,
I talk
to you about the secret book and when to go to 2 points and when to go for the extra point.
Yes.
And you say, next time I'm going to find out about this. Suddenly there's a guy on Twitter who keeps asking, and he's right to ask the question.
I'm sure he will again.
You've not looked into it.
I spent a good couple of minutes looking up something
before I came on.
I couldn't find much. But hey, look, I will go again. I'll regroup. I'll take on board what you said, and I feel like I've let you down, Marek.
You don't sound like it.
We'll look into
the intonation. There's no sense of regret in the intonation.
I will look into it. It's got to be out there somewhere. Like we talked about before, that I don't think you're going to get an actual book. I just want to manage expectations here. I don't think there's literally a book that I'm going to be able to give you. So it's more you want to see the chart and I guess algorithmically what you should do, right?
Just shut up and get me the book.
Okay.
Get the book.
I'm getting a little bit scared now. I think we need
I'll send Mike Evans around your house.
Mike Evans. Not the sheep, Mike.
And he gets pretty angry.
Now, listen, before you go, talk to us about what you're up to, because you've rebooted your brilliant YouTube series on painting, right? Which I think last time you were on, you were in the middle of...
I have been painting, and the most important thing I've done is during the 3 months when I stopped, I've walked the South Downs, mm-hmm. and I've got a walking channel. So I've got my YouTube channel, Marek Larwood, and I've got my walking channel, Cool Dudes Walking Club. Mm-hmm. I did a 100-mile walk...
What? It's called Walking Club.
Cool Dudes Walking Club.
Cool Dudes Walking Club, of course it is.
And I've invented a game now. You've not heard this?
No.
I invented a card game.
I didn't...
Pooh-Man. It's a genuine game.
The card game...
you have to collect it for Pooh-Man. Kids. I should send it to you.
You've got
to collect 5 brown stars. You put all the cards face down. You've got to collect 5 brown stars without the Pooh-Man catching. You look at the cards. There's Floater.
Yep.
Lionel Longlog. You've got 2 stars. There's Pooh-Man.
But you're out if that happens, right?
Belinda Bumyorn, Philippa Flushington. I've got all these cards. There's rules there.
Genius.
Look at pooman.co.uk.
I love it.
It's the greatest game. I'll send you a link to it. Your kids would love it.
Send us a link. I will send me a set as well, because the boys will be well up for that. And we'll push it out on social. That sounds like a perfect stocking filler for Christmas, because we've got to start thinking about that now. We're getting close, right?
Yes. This is the website. Pooh-Man, no, that's the website, pooman.co.uk.
.co.uk.
I've invested all my money in this, so I really need it to work.
We will get behind it. We will put the weight of the audience behind it. Well, congrats with that. It's amazing. And because you like inventing things, and what's happened to, I guess you've been, the sport you invented has been COVID affected. Have you been able to kickstart a new season there?
Well, no, because I have to move back to the Isle of Wight now. My industry is completely collapsed.
Is Vauxhall not
on hold for the moment? Mm. So anyone wishing to invest in Marek Larwood, and anyone with kids aged 4 years old and upwards who was bored and want something to do, buy my card game, the greatest card game in the history of the world.
I know that. Hey, maybe The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, can buy Vauxhall.
That'd be good. Have you got his number?
No, I don't.
There's as much chance of that happening as you getting that 2-point book.
Sure. All right. Well, I'll work on that, and then things could be looking up, kiddo. Great to see you, man. Thanks for dropping by and catching up with us, man. It's always a pleasure.
Take care, Nat. See you soon.
See you soon, bud. Lovely stuff from Marek. We'll put out a link on our social channels to his brilliant card game, so you can buy that for a loved one as decent Christmas present. Stocking filler, as I say. So get involved with that. And Marek will be back soon on the show. Guarantee that. Hopefully celebrating a Lions win. You never know. Stranger things have happened. We are back on Thursday with Greg Brady getting his set for all the weekend's action. Week 5 of the NFL preview show. Brady will help me get through it all. So we look forward to catching up with you then. Bye for now.